Chapter 45. Damn, Pitcurst, another one. What should I do? Hoker's voice was pleading, almost desperate. It would be an understatement to say that Pitt held the undivided attention of everyone in the control room. They were awed by his glacial concentration. It was beginning to seep through to them why he was held in such high esteem by Admiral Sandecker. If ever a man was in the right place at the right time, it was Dirk Pitt standing on the deck of a salvage ship calling the shots against the unnatural. Given a century, they could never have guessed the thought running through his mind. All they could detect from his expression was that anger had replaced studied contemplation. If attack and be damned worked with the Phantom Train, Pitt reasoned, there was little to lose by repeating the play. He nodded to Hoker. Ram the bastard. The mood abruptly changed now. Everyone took their strength from Pitt. Their fear gradually altered to growing determination to expose what their imaginations suggested were dead souls haunting the decaying ocean liner. The RSV zeroed in and struck the spectral barrier in the doorway. There seemed to be no resistance at first. The blurred figure gave way, but then it floated forward and its shroud enveloped the craft. All focus was lost from the cameras, and the monitors projected only vague shadows. It appears our hosts have substance, Pitt said conversationally. Baby is not responding to command, Hoker called out. The controls react as if it's immersed in cooked oatmeal. Try reversing the thrusters. No go. Hoker shook his head. Whatever those things are, they've immobilized it. Pitt walked across to the control console and peered over Hoker's head at the instruments. Why is the directional indicator vacillating? It's like they're wrestling with Baby, answered Hoker, trying to drag it somewhere, I would guess. Pitt gripped his shoulder. Shut down all systems except the cameras. What about the lights? Shut them down, too. Let those heavy-handed ghosts think they've damaged Baby's power source. The monitors dimmed until their screens showed only blackness. They looked cold and dead. But occasionally a faint, undefined movement showed through. If a stranger had walked into the control room, he would have written everyone off as mentally incompetent. Finding a group of people standing enraptured by dark TV screens was a psychologist's dream. 10 minutes became 20, and 20 became 30. There was no change. Anticipation hung heavy in the air. Nothing and still nothing. Then, very gradually, so gradually nobody noticed it at first, the screens began to lighten. What do you make of it? Pitt asked Hoker. No way of telling. Without power, I can't read the systems. Activate the instruments, but only long enough for the computers to record the data. You're talking in microseconds. Then go for it. The dexterity in Hoker's index finger ran a poor second to the incomprehensible speed of the data system as he flicked the switch. The demand signals were received by the RSV and returned to the computers, which in turn relayed their readout across the digital dials on the console before the switch clicked to off. Position 400 meters, heading 027 degrees, depth 13 meters. It's coming up, Gunn said. Surfacing about a quarter mile off our starboard stern, Hoker verified. I can make out color now, said Heidi, a dark green becoming a deep blue. The haze in front of the camera lenses began to shimmer. Then a bright orange glare burst from the video screens. Human forms could be distinguished now, blurred as though animated through a frosted window. We have sun, declared Hoker. Baby is on the surface. Without a word, Pitt ran from the room up a companionway to the bridge. He snatched a pair of binoculars hanging by the helm and aimed them across the river. The sky was free of clouds and the late morning sun reflected off the waters. A light breeze came in from the sea and nudged the short furrows upriver. The only vessels in sight were a tanker steaming from the direction of Quebec and a fleet of 5 fishing boats to the northeast, fanned out on different headings. Gunn came up behind Pitt. See anything? No, I was too late, Pitt said shortly. Baby is gone. Gone? Perhaps kidnapped is a better word. Baby has probably been taken aboard one of those fishing boats out there. He paused and handed the glasses to Gunn. My guess is the old blue trawler, or maybe the red one with the yellow wheelhouse. Their nets are hung so they block off all view of any activity on the far side of their decks. Gunn stared silently across the water for a few moments. Then he lowered the binoculars. "Baby is a $200,000 piece of equipment," he said angrily. "We've got to stop them." "I'm afraid the Canadians would not take kindly to a foreign vessel forcibly boarding boats inside their territorial limits. Besides, we've got to keep a low profile in our operation. The last thing the President needs is a messy incident over a piece of gear that can be replaced at the expense of the taxpayers." "It doesn't seem right," grumbled Gunn. "We'll have to forget righteous indignation," said Pitt. "The problem we have to face is who and why. Were they simply thieving sport divers or persons with more relevant motives?" "The cameras might tell us," said Gunn. "They might at that," Pitt said with a faint smile. "Providing the kidnappers didn't pull Baby's plug." There was a strange atmosphere in the control room when they returned, thick and acrid and almost electrical. Heidi was sitting in a chair, shuddering. All color was drained from her face. Her eyes were blank. A young computer technician had produced a glass of brandy and was coaxing her to drink it. She looked for all the world as if she'd seen her third ghost of the day. Hoker and three other engineers were bent over a circuit panel, checking the rows of indicating lights gone dark, fruitlessly manipulating knobs and switches. It was obvious to Pitt that all communications with the RSV had gone dead. Hoker looked up when he saw Pitt. "I've got something interesting to show you." Pitt nodded toward Heidi. "What's wrong with her?" "She saw something that knocked hell out of her." "On the monitors?" "Just before transmission was cut off," Hoker explained. "Take a look while I replay the videotape." Pitt watched. Gunn came and stood beside him, staring. The darkened screens slowly lightened, and once again they saw the RSV break into sunlight. The glare lessened and then flashed in several sequences. "This is when Baby was lifted from the water," observed Pitt. "Yes," Hoker agreed. "Now catch the next action." A series of distortion lines swept horizontally across the monitors, and then abruptly the left one blinked out. "The clumsy nerds," Hoker complained bitterly. "They didn't know a delicate piece of gear when they saw it. They dropped Baby on its port camera and broke the color pickup tube." At that moment, the shroud was pulled back, coming into focus. The material could now be clearly seen for what it was. "Plastic," exclaimed Gunn. "A thin sheet of opaque plastic." "That explains the protoplasm," said Pitt. "And there are your neighborhood spooks." Two figures in rubber diving suits knelt down and appeared to study the RSV. "A pity we can't see their faces under the face masks," said Gunn. "You'll see one soon enough," said Hoker. "Watch." A pair of legs clad in Wellington boots and denim pants walked into camera range. Their owner stopped behind the divers and bent down and peered into the camera lenses. He wore a British-style commando sweater with leather patches over the shoulders and elbows. A knit stocking cap was set at a casual side angle. Graying hair along the temples was brushed fastidiously above the ears. He seemed to be in his late 50s, Pitt figured, or perhaps middle 60s. He had the look about him of a man who might be older than he appeared. The face possessed a cruel, self-assured quality, found in men who are familiar with hazard. The dark eyes had the detached interest of a sniper peering through a telescopic sight at his impending victim. Suddenly there was a slight discernible widening of the eyes, and the intense expression turned to anger. His mouth twisted with silent words, and he spun quickly from view. "I'm not a lip-reader," said Pitt, "but it looked as if he said, 'You fools.'" They remained watching as what looked like a canvas tarpaulin was thrown over the RSV and the monitors turned dark for the last time. "That's all she wrote," said Hoker. "Contact was lost a minute later when they destroyed the transmission circuitry." Heidi rose from the chair and moved forward as if she was in a trance. She pointed at the dead monitors, her lips quivering. "I know him," she said, her voice barely audible. "The man in the picture. I know who he is.